You're listening to The Leonard LoPate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
During the debate in Oxford, Mississippi, Jim Lehrer asked the candidates to assess the threat Iran poses to the security of the United States, and both of them agreed that Iran would pose a major threat to Israel if it acquired a nuclear weapon. But Senator McCain argued for greater sanctions on Iran, while Senator Obama called for tough direct diplomacy. Did either get it right? Well, joining me now to discuss some of the common misperceptions about Iran and the real dangers posed by this rapidly modernizing nation is Robert Baer, a former top CIA operative and author of two New York Times bestsellers, Sleeping with the Devil and See No Evil. His latest, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, is published by Crown, and I'm very pleased that it brings Robert Baer back to the show. Hi, good to see you again.
It's great to be back.
Did you find that either candidate understood the complexities of dealing with Iran?
No, I think they missed it. Iran, yes, it wants a nuclear weapon. You know, after the invasion of Iraq, after Saddam's army collapsed, wouldn't you want one? What I think they missed is that Iran right now is using a nuclear weapon as a means to get attention, a means to force the United States to deal with Iran seriously, which we're not. At the same time, neither of them stated, and they should have, that Iran is not going to fire a missile with a nuclear warhead at Israel because Israel would eliminate the country of Iran immediately.
And you say the Iranians are not suicidal.
They're not suicidal at all. I mean, look in Iraq. They are cooperating in Iraq. I mean, you have the State Department, Satterfield, a man I used to work with, who's in charge of Iraq, saying it's thanks to the Iranians the surge is working.
Now, we'll get to the surge in a moment. But is the strategy, this nuclear strategy, something that they are just copying from the North Koreans? Because it seems to have worked for the North Koreans.
It's worked absolutely. I mean, a country like Iran feels that it's not getting its due. And in order to get our attention and to get Israel's attention, it is flaunting the possibility of a nuclear weapon.
And they get great pleasure sticking their finger in the eye of the United States?
Absolutely, especially now with the financial crisis with the United States. We'll probably be asked to leave Iraq by the current government and teach the United States a lesson for the Mossadegh coup in 1953, for years of what they call humiliation.
Mm-hmm. And keeping the Shah in power.
Keeping the Shah in power. A virtual war against Iran for the last 30 years.
You write that contrary to the way it's been presented in the West, Iran is not run by President Ahmadinejad. So who is running it?
There is an informal Politburo of military officers, of the Supreme Leader Khamenei, Rafsanjani, the Expediency Council, who run the country. This is very well known inside the U.S. government. It's very well known in the British government, a few other governments. Ahmadinejad is no more than a spokesman for hardcore radicals who only have a small bit of power.
So when Khatami was in power, he also had to be their spokesman when it was absolutely necessary?
He was a spokesman for somebody else. Khatami was relatively moderate, but he had no national security duties. He was the president of Iran, and totally contrary to our conceptions of government, he had no control.
You say the intentions of this shadow government is a soft takeover of the Middle East. Really?
Well, here's what they want. I mean, by default, Iran has inherited the anti-colonial agenda in the Middle East, and it goes way back. It includes the Palestinians, goes back to the Ottomans, basically. The Iranians have inherited this because everybody else has sort of given up.
So is this the same sort of thing that we're seeing with Cesar Chavez in South America, where somebody says, hey, it's good to be anti-American?
It is very good to be anti-American. And I call it an empire, but it's a misnomer. It's an empire by proxy because Iran does control today indirectly Lebanon through Hezbollah. Hezbollah has de facto control of the Lebanese government, is the government, and is the military. That's what I call empire by proxy.
Has the war in Iraq helped them to achieve the soft takeover?
The war in Iraq has been Iran's greatest victory since the revolution.
Because Iraq is now a Shiite country for the first time since 680 AD.
Since 680 AD, it's the first time it's been a Shia country. It, not only that, it I would call the government in Baghdad, the Shia prime minister, an Iranian proxy. Now, I'm not the only one. The ambassador last week, Ryan Crocker, said that it was Iran, through its surrogates in the government, was stopping an agreement between the United States and Iran. This is not Bob Baer. This is the American ambassador who represents the president.
You write, for 8 years, Iran tried and failed to defeat Iraq. Then, in the span of just over 2 weeks between March 20th and April 9th, 2003, American Apache helicopters, F-16s, and Hellfire missiles obliterated the Iraqi army, unintentionally handing Iran a victory it could never have achieved on its own.
That's absolutely
true.
We
decimated their army, the Iraqi army, and Iran now has the only real military power in the area.
Iraq was known as the shield of the Arabs. It had the fourth largest army in the world under Saddam. It was incredibly degraded since 1990, the first Gulf War. But what we did is, in Afghanistan as well as Iraq, we defeated Iran's major enemies, putting Iran in a position of power it hasn't seen since the Sasanian Empire.
And you say, so we've opened the door for Iran to annex Iraq and its oil through proxies, a process that's well underway. Now, the only process that I hear that's well underway is the surge.
Well, this is this administration claiming credit for something it didn't do. Let's be frank. The awakening, the Sunni awakening, were Iraqis that turned against al-Qaeda. And this is not to detract from American troops at all. But it was the Arabs, the Sunni Arabs, who turned against al-Qaeda, Iraqis. Likewise, Iran has held in check the Shia. We have the American ambassador, again, Ryan Crocker, saying that it's thanks to Iran that Muqtada Sadr, the renegade, has been pulled back to Iran and his militias are being absorbed by the Iranians.
Are the Iranians intentionally holding back on guerrilla warfare so that the Americans will leave?
Here's what the Iranians are going to do. They're going to use their surrogates to invite us to leave. We're going to have no choice but to leave. And that those surrogates are going to stay in power and want to hold the country together. Iran doesn't want a civil war in Iraq. It doesn't even particularly want dead American soldiers. It wants to inherit an Iraq that is fairly calm, no civil war, no sectarian war, and it will succeed.
And they already have a lot of oil in Iran. If they also wind up with Iraq,
They're going to approach Saudi production, if you include Iraq and Iran's production. Now, this is not going to be an empire, a classical empire, where they're going to send troops across the border. They're going to use surrogates. And if you're an Iraqi Shia Arab, you need Iran to hold on to power.
And the Sunnis will have no say in the matter?
The Sunnis are going to be forced out of Anbar province into the desert. They're going to be irrelevant.
My guest is Robert Baer. His latest book, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. It's been claimed that it was the intention of the Bush administration to create permanent bases in Iraq. Do you think that was true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I heard that, I thought it was a nutty conspiracy theory. But what you see is the neocons completely misperceived the Middle East, what was possible in Iraq. It's a very xenophobic country. They were never going to allow, in the long run, American bases. And I think reality has finally caught up to the neocons, even though they don't admit it.
But you also write the only real way to hold Iraq together was through the same kind of brutality that Saddam employed, which America was never going to do. We talked about bringing democracy there. Democracy meant that the Sunnis, who had run the country for all those years, the minority, were going to lose because one man, one vote.
One man, one vote. The Shia were going to get elected. They were going to vote as a bloc. What we also missed, again, I'll go back to Iran, is that the Iranians do very well with the Arabs now. The neocons said it'll never happen. Persians and Arabs, different races, they'll never work together. That turned out not to be true.
What are Iran's relations with Russia and China?
Well, right now, Iran is the beneficiary of our policy in Georgia. The Russians have picked up arms sales to Iran. They've blocked any new sanctions against Iran. So the Iranians have benefited from the war in Georgia.
So what happens if the United States withdraws and Iran winds up taking over Iraq for all intents and purposes? You see some future president saying, hey, we can't allow this, and send troops back in? Bush or somebody?
Fighting Iran, look, we can march to Tehran in a matter of weeks. We can destroy Tehran, but we cannot occupy it as we did Iraq. If we go to war with Iran, and there are no limited wars with Iran, we're talking about a 30 years war, which will bankrupt this country.
Let's look at what the two candidates said about Iran. John McCain said, we cannot have a second Holocaust if Iran gets nuclear weapons. He also argued to impose significant, meaningful, painful sanctions on the Iranians through a League of Democracies. Barack Obama said we first had to he had to defend himself against the charge that he doesn't believe the Republican Guard is a terrorist organization. But then he argued that the single thing that has to be that has strengthened Iran over the last several years has been the war in Iraq. You say the same. He agreed with the idea that tougher sanctions should be employed, but he said, we're also going to have to, I believe, engage in tough direct diplomacy with Iran. And this is a major difference I have with Senator McCain, this notion of not talking to people who are punishing, but we're punishing them, has not worked. Do you really think that the Iranians would engage in serious negotiations?
Absolutely. The Iranians, look at it today, could start World War III with Israel if they wanted to, simply from Lebanon, launching rockets, some sort of dirty warhead on the end of the
I mean, they could claim that they didn't do it, that, that Hezbollah
Or if
did
they
it.
Really wanted World War III, they could even get blamed for it if that was – if there were sort of millennial crazies. They don't want World War III. They want their power, their newfound power, which this administration handed them in Iraq and Afghanistan, acknowledged. And what you cannot do – and Obama is right. You cannot go to Iran and demand preconditions that they acknowledge the existence of Israel. I don't think, and the Iranians have told me over and over again, as well as Hezbollah, that they want to wipe Israel off the map. Ahmadinejad is not the president. He is probably bipolar. He does not speak for the government, and he's treated with amusement in Iran.
But you say that the Iranians are not suicidal. Hasn't martyrdom been turned into one of the most positive things within the various Shiite groups of Hezbollah, for example, and Iran? There were martyrs of the war with Iraq.
This is a great point. But the point is that the Iranians can turn it off like a light switch. The last Iranian martyr was 1988 at the end of the Iran-Iraq War. In Lebanon, Iranian-backed martyrs stopped. And, you know, we're going back to 2000, where they stopped doing suicide bombings. The last Iranian attack on the United States was 1996. Now, somebody who is completely determined to go to war with Iran say, well, that's enough, 1996. But that was 12 years ago. And the question is, a politician, can we forgive them for Khobar Tower barracks in Saudi Arabia? I say yes.
My guest is Robert Baer. His latest book, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, published by Crown. We will continue our conversation after this. Later in this hour, States of the Union is all about New Jersey, and I'll be talking about the Garden State with WNYC's own Bob Henley. In our second hour, a debriefing on yesterday's economic freefall and what's likely to happen next. Then Roy Orbison's widow Barbara stops by, and finally, director Jonathan Demme on his latest, Rachel Getting Married. This is WNYC and WNYC.org now. Our entire show is available as a podcast. We're back with Robert Baer, who writes regularly for Time.com, has contributed to Vanity Fair, The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post. He has a new movie called Car Bomb, a documentary history, recently aired on the UK's Channel 4, which follows him to Northern Ireland, Italy, Israel, and Lebanon, where we meet bomb makers from the IRA, the Mafia, and the Hezbollah. His latest book is called The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. It's published by Crown. See No Evil was the basis for the film Syriana, which reminds me that Syria is something we're not discussing, a country we're not discussing. Have they totally fallen off the map?
Well, Syria is a country we don't, it's very difficult for us to understand because we don't absorb the reality that it's run by a very precarious, in a precarious situation, the Alawites. They are barely Muslims. I'll say it. They believe in the Trinity. The Alawites have always had to associate themselves with a cause bigger than themselves. First the Palestinians, radical Palestinians, and then the Iranians.
Now the Alawites are discriminated against in Iraq.
The Alawites are discriminated against everywhere. And to hold on to power, they have to pretend to be at war with Israel all the time and to support anybody who claims to be at war with Israel. Otherwise, they collapse.
Now, before I misspoke, I said Cesar Chavez, the union leader, when I meant Hugo Chavez, the head of Venezuela. And I'm sorry, these things happen every once in a while. The wrong name just trips off the tongue when you go into automatic pilot. Please, I hope someone will forgive me. In your first chapter, The Iranian Paradox, you give a very different portrait of Iran than what most Americans think. You say Iran's religious parties generally receive only 10% of the vote.
Unlike Turkey, which is a majority of the vote, the religious parties.
And Turkey is a secular country.
And you go to Tehran and you're just astounded, stunned by the parties, how open the society is, and at the same time it's a police state.
But aren't women still expected to wear the hijab and the chador? And
well, I was there.
Aren't couples prevented from holding hands in public?
Well, I was there. They were loosening up the rules. They were pulling the chador back on their head. They were smoking hubbly bubblies. Touching men, driving around with men. There are very few amputations there. You have a country that's, all over the internet, the third largest user. I've seen one figure. You've seen nanotechnology is spreading across Iran. They're developing, way beyond some of our institutes and so on.
You say that Persian is the most common language on the internet after English and Mandarin Chinese. Really? Obviously, it's not the third most populous country in the world.
It's
the more than Russian.
This is the statistics that
more than Spanish.
More than Spanish, yes.
Is that just because everybody in Iran has a computer?
Everybody's got a computer. They're modernizing. They listen to our music. They develop their own music, and it's a society that occurs. Almost underground. So when you see Tehran, it's a very bland place, but there is a truly a depth there that we miss.
Ahmadinejad writes his own blog, you say. But it's interesting, one of the things that has never come up in my discussions with other peoples about Iran is all the sexual stuff that you include here. Iranians keep an old Shia practice with regard to pleasure and sex, pleasure marriage or sanctioned prostitution?
It is sanctioned prostitution. You can marry for an hour. And the only thing that the cleric cares about
Have a mullah at an hotel?
Is a mullah, basically. He's at the hotel and he blesses the marriage. It lasts for an hour. And all he cares about is if there's issue coming from the relationship that someone takes care of that child.
You say also doctors perform more sex change operations in Iran than any other country except Thailand. And the Iranian government even pays up to half the cost for some transsexuals?
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's accepted completely there. I mean, what we're talking about is Iran is a paradox. It's a cliche, but it is a paradox. It's at one level a very rational country. At another level, it's a country that's attached to history, which we can't understand. But more than that, it's a country that believes in its own existence. It's been within its borders for thousands of years.
It was once the great power of the
Middle East. Yeah, and the neocons will tell you that if we just overthrow the mullahs, that Iran will be a good ally of the United States. The fact is that even the young people share the same ideals with the mullahs. They may not agree with their social program, but they believe in Iranian power.
And you say that while Americans see Iran's president and the mullahs as relics from the Dark Age, in reality, they are the driving force behind the modernization of Iran.
Mm-hmm. I always
thought that they objected to the drive for modernization of the Shah.
they objected to the industrialization and the way it occurred in Iran and this sense of inequality, the haves and the have-nots in Iran. That's what they objected to. But many innovations occurring in Iran goes back to the mullahs in one way or another. You will find very moderate ayatollahs. They will interview. I mean, think of this, that an ex-CIA officer being taken into the office of an ayatollah on public television and being interviewed is not the Iran we think of.
That's you.
That was me. He knew I was in the CIA. He knew I was a case officer. He had known that I was against, you know, basically at war with Iranian intelligence for 30 years. And yet he sat down and talked to me very frankly about the modernization of Iran. That is not the Iran that most Americans know.
So is there a power struggle among the ayatollahs and the other high clerics?
There's a power struggle every day. Iran is a country at war with itself. It is not in a pre-revolutionary state, but it's a war with itself. It is a country that would dearly love to truly democratize, but just can't find its way there. But it's getting closer.
Well, it has more than one party, although elections are restricted. But it sounds to me like the sort of thing that we've seen in many one-party states, where there is a kind of a liberal wing and a conservative wing. And that was the case in communist states and even in Hitler's Nazi Germany.
Well, I find it's in Iran, it's even gone beyond that. I mean, it's truly, there is a democracy there, even within the TV. You know, last week I was on television, Iranian television, with all people, Bernie Kerik. We were talking. Bernie Kerik was just pounding the Iranians, and I was, you know, going my usual spiel. Now, I mean, think about the former police.
Do the Iranians know who Rudy Giuliani is?
They knew exactly who he was. And his very sweet girl was interviewing us. And it was a very bizarre interview. But the fact is they aired that on Iranian television.
And do you think that there's a large audience for that sort of conversation?
Absolutely. The Iranians are fascinated by us, and they'd like to figure us out, and they want us to figure them out.
My guest is Robert Baer. His latest book, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpowers, published by Crown. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. But you also say that we shouldn't misinterpret that interest. You say that Americans need to understand that although schoolgirls might watch Oprah and want iPods and flat-screen TVs, that doesn't mean they really want to be like us.
No, they will accept part of our technology and our, you know, our cultural, our pop culture, but not all of it. And what they won't accept are our politics. They have this sense of fairness that runs through the society, through the secular sides and as well as the religious sides, and they will stick to that. They will never become American states. They will always be something else.
Is this also because they have that sense of history you were talking about earlier, where they can think back to Cyrus and the glories of the past? Do they see themselves as one of history's great empires?
They see themselves as one of history's great cultures. I mean, they go back to Zoroastrianism and the whole idea of good and evil, which was adopted by Christianity and Judaism later on. They say that occurred in Iran first.
And many people, I talked about an Iranian about this yesterday, many people claim that Iran is as much a Zoroastrian country as it is a Shiite Muslim country.
Oh, I absolutely believe that. I mean, you're moving into an area of religion that my depth isn't that great, but they really are. They have all sorts of Islam.
This is Zarathustra of Nietzsche's fame, thus spoke Zarathustra.
Islam is an accretion on the top of this very old society. And so when you look at Iranians, you have to go beyond Islam and look at this old culture, which has its problems. The whole idea of good and evil is not the best way to look at the world.
But it also accepts contradictions. And much of what you write about here involves contradictions. And we're more likely to want to see a country as having certain consistencies.
Look, we want to look at Iran as Hitler's Germany. Ahmadinejad is Iran's Hitler. We get rid of him and the problems of Iran are solved. That's obviously an oversimplification that misses the politics, misses the nuances, misses Iran. And this is what I write this book about, is to get over that.
Well, we saw that with Khatami, where American press kept on saying all these people want liberalization, and then the next election, a much more conservative guy wound up winning the presidency.
Absolutely. I mean, then we also mistook Khatami as being the de facto president when, in fact, he wasn't. We always get it wrong.
Although he was a cleric.
He was a cleric. He was very moderate, very reasonable. But he was at war with the hardline clerics.
One of the most surprising things you relate in this book is that one of the most popular dramas on Iranian state television is about an Iranian diplomat who saves French Jews from the Nazis during World War II.
The Iranians are very protective of their Jewish community. It's going away.
It was discriminated against after the revolution.
It was discriminated against from the hardliners. But as the regime matured, and we're talking about a maturing Iran. I mean, our view of Iran is frozen in 1979. But as it matured, it was very important for the Iranians to have a multicultural society. And they've done their best to hold on to the Jewish community.
Why is Oprah the most popular American television program?
I don't know. I went to a Hezbollah school, and I asked the kids, you know, what did they watch? And they said, we watched. I said, do you watch American TV? And he said, absolutely. And they said, Oprah, we love Oprah. I have no idea. I never got to the answer on that.
You would think that they'd come up with their own Oprah.
They are willing to accept American TV to a degree, but not all of it.
So what's the current situation? Is Iran the only serious military power in the Gulf at this point?
Iran can put a million people into uniform. Iran has a battle-hardened military. It has rockets that can control the Gulf and essentially take out 17 million barrels of traded oil, which, puts us into a depression. You think the subprime meltdown is bad, a war in the Gulf would push us over the edge, no doubt about it. And the Iranians, if attacked, will retaliate against oil.
And it was my sense from what you said earlier that although you think Barack Obama may be a little better on Iran, he doesn't understand it either.
Well, he called the Republican Guard, it's the Revolutionary Guard. That's the short. I mean, he got the name wrong.
The Republican,
Guard was in Iraq. Yeah, it's hard to keep track of.
They were the soldiers. They were Saddam Hussein's.
And look, the problem we have is, yes, they were terrorists. Yes, they did. They do have American blood on their hands. But what we've seen is that they've evolved since 1996 into something, a more conventional military force, which is an economic threat as opposed to a terrorist threat.
So if you were advising a president, an incoming president, whether it's McCain or Obama, what would you be telling him?
Send some immediately to Tehran, a senior negotiator, Jim Baker, for instance, somebody who knows the Middle East. Ask them what they want. And I think we'd be surprised if they were forced to sit down, how reasonable their demands would be. But you'll never know until you ask them.
Because they just want to be treated with respect? Do you think that
they want to be treated with the power that they are? Otherwise, they're going to show us. And if we continue to ignore them and continue to deal with them, they will make a nuclear weapon faster than we would want them to.
Why were they incapable of defeating Saddam Hussein?
This is a lesson they'll never forget. They use conventional tactics, waves of young boys they sent across into machine guns, World War I attrition tactics. They used tanks, and they figured out by 1988 that they could not win this war. And it was at that point that they switched to non-conventional tactics, which we've seen in Lebanon, which we have seen a bit in Iraq, and we will see more if we go to war with. And these unconventional tactics can thwart a modern army.
Just one more thing. They also share a border with Afghanistan. And the people who live near the border in Afghanistan are also Shiites and have, in some cases, more links to Iran historically than they do to their own country. Azerbaijan also, which is oil rich, is a Shia country and has had traditional links to Iran. What does all of this mean for the future?
This means what we're going to see is an Iranian empire by proxy. Western Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. And what they're saying is, look, we own the Levant. We have 90% of the Gulf or Shia, the rim of the Gulf. this is what our empire is going to look like. We're not going to invade. It's going to be by proxy, and you better pay attention to us or else.
Robert Baer's latest book is The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, published by Crown. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It's been great. Great questions.
Up next, States of the Union is all about New Jersey, and WNYC's own Bob Hennelly will be here to tell us about Senator Frank Lautenberg's reelection campaign, as well as what we can expect in the races for the two open House seats, and, of course, what's going to happen with the presidential election. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.